Welcome to another edition of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. With me, we have guest co-host Matt Hickey, and potentially joining us at some point is usual co-host Jess Baker. Jess just moved down to Florida and doesn't quite have everything up and running yet, so we shall see. But in the meantime, we will soldier forward. Matt, how you doing this evening?
I'm not too bad. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm excited after what I thought was a decent Phoenix race, and you know, now we're going to really get into the swing of the season here. Where to start? I guess we'll start with the Phoenix race. What were your, you know, what was your initial thought after the race ended, and did that change after you kind of, you know, brainstormed about the race a couple days later?
Yeah, thoughts were good. I had to get over the fact that my prediction skills at who would do well were so subpar, because now I'm second to last in my own fantasy IndyCar league. So obviously don't ask me who's going to do well in races, because apparently I just don't know. But staying, if you take away from the fact that if you stayed off the internet for the 2 days afterwards, I thought it was good. I didn't let any of the negativity on Twitter really get to me. I know, some people didn't like the race, and I can definitely see where they're coming from. It wasn't action-packed. It wasn't passes every 3 seconds. It wasn't as good as St. Petersburg, if you ask me. But, you know, sometimes comparing road courses to ovals can be a little tricky. I liked it, though. I liked the race. I thought the strategies at the end is whether, you know, take tires, don't take tires, pitting with, you know, 70 laps to go. I would have loved to see that play out without a caution, just to see how the drivers who were trying to go 70 laps on tires were going to do at the end of the race. But the finish was excellent. And then obviously Alexander Rossi put on an absolute clinic, and that was such a treat to watch. So yeah, overall I have positive impressions on the race. I know some people don't agree, but that, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, I think, you know, overall I agree with you. I was curious to see how the race played out. I'm kind of glad there was the caution at the end, only because I think when we had that long stretch, you know, before about the halfway point of the race, it did kind of get spread out. But not to say that there wasn't action then, as we saw, you know, Rossi battle back from a lap down, you know, to really, you know, come back and finish. What did he finish? Third place is, you know, has to be the driver of the day. And I know in your driver rating system, I think he was your number one driver for the week, correct?
Yep, him is a kind of a mirror image. Well, no, Wickens was first after St. Petersburg, according to the rating scale that I used, and then it was Rossi, followed by Bourdais. And it's kind of the same thing this time. The first two drivers in the rating scale didn't win the race. The driver who won the race was third, just because, you know, obviously Rossi unlapping himself the hard way, it was an absolute thrill
for him to. Yeah, we didn't see that too much.
No, and for him to pass, what was it, like 19% of the cars out of the whole race. Out of all the passes, he had 19% of them. And then the fact that Wickens, you know, obviously his race was impressive. He did a masterful job of attempting to hold off Joseph Newgarden there at the end. All in all, I don't think he was out of the top five at any point in the race when it was on the same cycle. You know, obviously if he pitted early, he went to the back. But when everything was cycled out and everybody was on the same strategy, I don't think he was out of the top five at all. So it was just another great race for him.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, leading 113 laps in your first two IndyCar races, I don't know if that's a record. I didn't really do a ton of research on it, but it's definitely a record in maybe the last 10 or 15 years.
Laughable when Townsend Bell on the broadcast said that he is the greatest rookie of all time already after two races. I don't know if I'd go that far, but
yeah,
definitely impressive, definitely gets a lot of respect, but I don't know if it's too early. If he wins a championship, maybe. But for now, it's a little too early.
That's like calling that guy in the Angels, Otani, Babe Ruth after the first week of the baseball season because he hit two home runs.
Well, he's not.
He might be, but you know, again, we shall see. And I don't know, whatever 160 games is left in the crazy baseball season. I think, really, I guess the main, if we're going to say anything disappointing about Phoenix, was that the second line didn't really come in for the most part. You saw Hunter Ray get up there, especially on restarts in the start of the race, and get aggressive. And obviously Newgarden made it work for the winning pass, so I can't completely knock it. But it didn't seem to have the effect that IndyCar and and Phoenix wanted it to for the Tire Dragon, which leads me to what I thought was actually a pretty good suggestion by Will Power. You know, sometimes he makes these crazy suggestions for IndyCar to do, you know, to improve racing, and sometimes they come across like he's just complaining in the end. But if you didn't read it, I think it was on motorsport.com, Will Power said that they should have, I think it was, you know, it's either after or before qualifying, I forget his exact timeline, but have a final 1 hour practice where you get an extra set of tires and you are mandated to run the second line. I think it's an interesting idea. I don't know if it would work. It would require teams to definitely make sure their cars were dialed in, and you might not see a ton of cars on the track simply because, you know, nobody wants to get caught up in a final practice sort of situation. But I'll give Power credit. It's an interesting idea that I think warrants consideration and maybe a test in next off season. I don't know. What do you think about that idea?
It's outside the box. It definitely raises eyebrows and gets people to think a little bit. I think at the end of the day, what we've seen in the last couple of years of Phoenix, I think with the tire degradation the way it is, I don't see it ever becoming a two groove track now, especially, you know, I was so ready to have the Tire Dragon be, you know, like my favorite life meme or just my favorite go-to phrase, but I was so psyched to see it work, but it didn't really work too well. I just think at the end of the day, the Phoenix is just going to be a one groove track with the speeds that IndyCar carries and with the amount of rubber that builds up on the outside lane. If you weren't, like, turn one when drivers were going in there, if you weren't to the bottom lane by after the first third of the turn, you really had to worry about marbles. So when you saw Newgarden pass Wickens, he immediately tucked to that bottom line. If you couldn't do that, you were going to be in some serious trouble. Then we saw a couple guys get in trouble. So I don't see Phoenix ever becoming a two-group track. So I don't know if Will's Power's idea, as crazy as it is, I don't know if it'll work. If they do implement that idea, I don't know how they're going to enforce it. You couldn't even get Ed Carpenter to obey the pit stop practice rules. So some show off out there is probably going to try to just get the fastest lap and not worry about rubbering in the groove. And then you also have to worry about the fact that if they don't control the marbles during that practice session, there's a very good chance someone could just slide up and hit the wall. And that's just unnecessary waste of money, time, resources. So, I don't know what to think of. I don't know if it'll work.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to, you know, go out and start backing that idea, but I appreciate, you know, somebody thinking outside the box on this and you know, seeing what you could come up with. But I think overall, you know, Phoenix as a, you know, one groove track was still better this year than it's been in the past couple years. Not that it was the most amazing short track oval race ever by any means, but it was definitely a huge improvement. The strategy at the end of the race, whether to take tires or not take tires, is something I think will be talked about.
Do you have, not to like put you on the spot, but do you, and I'll be one to answer first, but is there, into your recollection, is there like a short track oval race that really stands out to you as being, you know, just prolific? Because I'm trying to think, there's been a couple good Iowa races.
Yeah, Iowa's...
2000, which ones, which year was Karam and Carpenter going? I think it was 2015.
That was 2015. 2014, was that the one when Newgarden and Hunter Ray battled from, you know, 8th or 9th place on fresh tires?
Yeah, 2014, because I think Newgarden was with...
So that was just Sarah Fisher then.
Fisher-Carpenter at that point. Yeah, he was in, like, the Wichita State car, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, now you're making me all teary-eyed about the old Iowa days. I'm turning into Robin Miller. I guess Iowa's kind of been a little bit of a snooze fest the last 2 years. Iowa put on some good shows. Trying to think of some others that put on good shows. I don't know if you have any others outside of Iowa.
You know, obviously, Gateway last year to me was kind of similar to Phoenix this year, into not that it was the most amazing race ever, but there was some great strategy played there, and obviously Newgarden's pass, you know, makes the race memorable in its own. But I think Iowa's been pretty decent. Milwaukee the last couple years wasn't that amazing, although seeing Bourdais pretty much lap everybody in the entire field, I think the final race there was pretty cool to see. You know, he put it on amazing display. I don't remember what year that was. 2014, maybe.
15. It was an
2015.
arrow kit.
Okay. 2015.
Nazareth 99 was pretty cool when Cart was
Oh,
there.
yeah.
Also, did you know that the IRL was at Dover for, I think, 2 years? And one of them is literally just the whole highlights is basically just a crash compilation. It's just nothing but
I'm not surprised.
It's nothing but cars wrecking.
Been to Dover. Dover is actually a client of mine in my day job. So I've had lunch at the little trackside place. It's a neat track to look at, but I can't see that ever being good for for IndyCar nowadays. I think it would be a giant disaster and a lot of money lost for pretty much every team.
How about the only way they go back is if Dallara was the title sponsor of the race? How about
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Yep. That would. I think we've said enough on that one. Yeah, obviously the Nazareth race is going back. We're great. I was younger, so I don't remember a ton of them, but I know I was there for most of them, at least for the last 5 or 6 years of the track, I think. But that's feels like a long time ago. I remember Paul Tracy having a good race there and then getting crashed out. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, but I had a Team Cool Green hat on, and I picked Tracy to win because I liked the Team Cool Green hat. I remember that one distinctly. But I think in most recent memory, the Iowa race, similar strategy to Phoenix Saturday night, where you're, do you pit or do you not pit for tires with that last caution? I don't know what you thought, and I'll put you on the spot after I put out my thoughts on it. Going into that caution and Paul Tracy and everybody's talking about, do you pit or don't you pit for tires? I wholeheartedly agreed in pitting for tires because my first thought was Newgarden and Hunter Ray did it in 2015 or 2014 at Iowa and stormed through the field. And I thought, it had been long enough since the previous caution. I don't have the box score up in front of me here. That if you have a guy in fourth or fifth place on a short oval with 5, 6 laps to go versus somebody on 50 lap old tires, it's going to be tough to hold them off. Even though Wickens and Hinchcliffe drove a hell of a race, I think pitting for tires was the right strategy. But at the same time, you can't fault SPM for not pitting. It's a gamble you have to take, and the cars had been so strong all day. It's almost let's stay in the lead and let's see what we have versus falling back to fourth or fifth and being stuck behind Newgarden, and especially at that point, then they'd be stuck behind Rossi, who was the strongest car of the day. You might not get that chance for a win. So I think it's a chance they had to take.
Yeah, and you heard Hinch say it on the radio when he was discussing with his team. He said, "Hey, if this is Iowa or." Maybe did he say Gateway? I can't remember. He said another track, but mainly because
yeah,
it
right.
Brought back the memories of 2014, where he said, "Hey, if this is Iowa, absolutely, we're pitting." We saw then it worked. But they decided not to, and I agree with the people. I agree with you, and I agree with the people who pitted. I would take the fresh tires any day, especially with the new rule about being under 20 laps. The lap traffic goes to the back, and they said. I think Hinch said it in the radio. I don't know if they weren't aware of that, but I think he said, he's going to have to pass 10 cars to get to us. Well, when they reshuffled the order, Newgarden was fourth, so he only had 3 cars to pass, and he dispatched 2 of them really quickly. So I would have taken the tires. I believe, and don't quote me on this, but the cars were on tires that had just entered the pit window. So with about 70 laps to go in the race or so, because I was thinking to myself, wow, there's no way these guys are going 70 laps with these tires. They're final 5 laps, they're going to be trying to keep it out of the wall. So I believe they're pretty much extending the tires to the limit. So I would have put it for fresh rubber. I agree with those who did. Nothing like throwing the dice and going for it. And Wickens did a hell of a job trying to hold off Newgarden. His lines were excellent. But at the end of the day, I would have taken the tires as well.
Yeah. And, hats off again to Schmidt-Peterson, who's struggled in off-season testing, and we were all wondering, what's going on here? And on a street course and an oval, have had 2 strong showings back-to-back. So, you know, hats off to, you know, Lena Gade and her team for, you know, really putting on an impressive showing the first 2 weeks. I still can't believe Robert Wickens has led 113 laps in the first two races. If I had to put money on that before the season, I would have been running the opposite direction. And you know, we all picked Wickens to be our potential rookie of the year for his, you know, overall racing experience and, you know, familiarity with open wheel racing at the lower levels, but I still would never have guessed he led 113 laps and really is due a, you could almost say he was due a win in either of the first two races. And obviously we know what happened in the first race, but even in the second race he got shafted by his tires.
Hold that thought. I'm gonna just quick do some, go on to your next stop. I'm gonna quick do some research, see how many laps Marco Andretti's led in the last 2 years.
All right, go on. Go. You keep researching while we keep talking here. That's how we do it. Live research on the.
I'm just
air.
Trying to. I'm gonna. I guarantee. Let me do some research. I almost guarantee that Marco has not led 113 laps in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think you might be able to go back a couple more years than that. And listen, guys, I've said it in multiple episodes. I still am pulling for Marco to have a strong year as the, you know, local Pennsylvania driver running full time, and the Andretti name. I hope he can get it together. I don't think, you know, qualifying it looked like the team just set the car too low. I don't know if that was his fault or the engineering fault or what have you. But you saw the picture he posted where the bottom floorboard was kind of bent there. And he mentioned in third gear he was bottoming out. So I feel bad. I don't think necessarily you can attribute Phoenix to driver error. He had a decent race as best as he could have to finish 12th. Although they did mention, I forget if it was Paul Tracy or who mentioned it on the air, that, you know, Marco essentially scrapped his setup and went something almost identical to Rossi. And we saw how amazingly strong Rossi was, you know, unlapping himself. I would like to know the last time somebody has unlapped themselves like that at a short track, or at any track.
Yeah, the most famous example of that would be Jacques Villeneuve, 95, Indy 500. Yeah. He was two laps down, so.
So it's been 23 years since something awesome like that. I mean, you know, we could be wrong. That'd be a lot of research to do while we're on the air here. So I hope he can figure it out. I think he was actually decently strong in the first race of the year at St. Pete. We shall see this weekend in Long Beach. I'm actually pretty excited for Long Beach. I was a little nervous, and then I remembered that there's a new aero kit this year, and the last 2 years weren't that exciting. But I think the new aero kit with the high-speed straights at Long Beach will be a much improved racing. What are your initial Long Beach thoughts before we have practice here in 12, about 16 or 17 hours, depending on how good I am at math?
Yeah, just one second real quick. Marco Andretti, 99 laps led in the last 5 years. So Wickens has done in two races what Marco hasn't done in 5 years. So my guarantee is right. But that was actually just a complete guess. Anyways, Long Beach, yes, I think it should be an excellent race. If it's any indication of what St. Petersburg is like, which I honestly think St. Petersburg doesn't always put on the best show. I think there's been a couple really good years. 2013 comes to mind. I thought 2013 St. Pete was excellent.
Yes.
I don't think 2017 was all that bad. But they have put on a couple snoozers. And so to see what they did the first round, it has me pumped for the rest of the street courses on the year. I think if we can take anything from St. Petersburg, I think, and even Phoenix too, it seems like the same handful of drivers were solidly competitive at both, and that'd be Hinch, Wickens, the three Penske drivers, the two Ganassi drivers, Rossi and Hunter Ray. I think if you take, well, I think that's what, nine drivers, I think.
Did you mention Bourdais?
Oh, Bourdais. I'm sorry, Bourdais. You've been excellent. So, yeah, I think if you take those 10 drivers, trying to think of anybody else. No, I mean, it's pretty much been those 10 drivers that you've seen consistently solid at both races. You know, Power and Pagenaud have had their troubles both at Phoenix and Pagenaud at St. Pete. Jones crashed last race. But other than that, and, you know, Bourdais with his pit issues. But other than that, I think I don't want to say those are 10 guys we got to watch out for the championship because it's only been two races. But those are guys that you definitely want to keep your eye on for the remainder of the season.
Yeah.
Long Beach, yeah, one of my favorite street courses. So glad that we don't have to deal with three more years of if F1 is going to take over the rights for Long Beach, because they did sign a new deal last year to keep IndyCar there, which is a little biased. I'll say it's good for IndyCar, but definitely good for the city, in my opinion, just because of the alterations they would have to make to the city to get F1 there. But then, yeah, I just super excited for the race. I think it should be excellent. Hopefully we get a clean one, and hopefully the five drivers I picked in fantasy help me out a little bit.
Yeah, just so you know, everybody's aware out there, you know, Jess, Matt, myself, we're all in the same little fantasy, Matt's Fantasy IndyCar League, and I think right now, to the three of us, I am dominating. I don't really know where Jess is in the standings, but, you know, I think I'm in eighth overall at 37, so not to toot my own horn in the middle of our broadcast here, but Jess, she's not on with us right now again, but, you know, and I hate to throw her under the bus while she's not on, but guys, you got to catch up. Obviously, I got lucky in race one with all five of my picks finishing in the top 10, but you know, we shall see. I think Long Beach is definitely going to be an exciting race. I think I'll be able to have practice on my computer tomorrow afternoon while I'm getting some work done. So definitely interested to see how that goes. Looking forward, we are now up to, well, technically it's just 34 confirmed entries for the 500 with J.R. Hildebrand's snazzy Salesforce.com car, or Salesforce car, number 66. You know, it was the official announcement today. It's kind of the official announcement that's been unofficial, God, since about January. But as we, as you guys might have saw Friday, I don't know if it's technically official yet or not. You know, our guest last week, you know, really, you know, I think we must have given him good luck is the way I'm going to put it, because he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to, you know, if Bird Racing was going to join the 500 in some capacity. And then the next day after we published the episode, they said James Davison will be the third entry for AJ Foyt Racing in the 500. I haven't seen it officially confirmed other than
Racing. Tomorrow, 2:30 p.m. Central Time.
Tomorrow. See, there we go.
I think it was on James Davison's Instagram. I think he said 12:30 Pacific there'd be some sort of announcement.
So, you know, that's, you know, that brings us to 35, and I don't know if Buddy Lazier is going to pull something together at the last minute here to make 36 or not, but either way, you know, we're looking at actually to be a, you know, more than just a one car bump day again, which I predicted. not to throw you under the bus there, Matt, but that was definitely my pick.
I did not say that. I said 33, so and, you got
and
me
I,
there.
And I think we're going to have to call this podcast a good luck, you know, omen for everybody that's been a guest. You know, Newgarden joins us and you know, has an okay first race and wins the second race and is now leading the standings. Bird Racing gets an announcement the next day. You know, Jay Fry continues on, you know, heading IndyCar in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, a bird dumped on my car, so I don't know when's this going to come my way. I don't see it.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'm sorry. Listen, when you're involved, when you work for racing, and we get you back on the show, then the good luck will be there.
Oh, okay, got it.
Speaking of Jay Fry, not to sidetrack from the actual racing talk, but our "In Jay Fry We Trust" T-shirts are now available online. Tweeted out the link on the Pit Lane Parlay Twitter account. Would be Thursday evening around 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So check those out. And the limited edition Pit Lane Parlay hats. Only a few of those are available. And if anybody wants their hat or shirt autographed by a driver, doesn't matter who, please just send me a message, and you know, I'll work it out either. Next weekend in Barber during the month of May when I'm in Indy. But wanted to talk about our contests to win a free you know, Jay Fry shirt. The contest was originally just for a Jay Fry shirt. If you leave a review on iTunes, you know, please leave a review wherever you can leave a review in the podcast apps, reviews definitely help us get noticed by more people. But also, the man Jay Fry himself is, I think Matt, we can officially say a legend.
Yes.
Jay Fry has promised 2 pit and garage passes to any race of the winner's choosing for leaving a review. I don't think it gets any more awesome than that. We're not going to see anybody in NASCAR or F1 or any other form of racing do something similar. So hats off to Jay Fry for being a fantastic man. And yeah, leave a review on iTunes, please. And we will, I'll give everybody until, let's see, I'm deciding this on the fly here. I'll give you two before practice starts next weekend for the Barber race. Whenever the first practice is Friday, I have no idea without looking. So you get, you know, another week here from when you're probably listening to this show to enter the contest. We already have 10 entries in day one, so definitely get your entries in there, and I will figure out how to choose at random. Either way, purchase a shirt and support the show. Moving on, I guess let's go back to the 500. You know, we're at 35 cars, maybe 36, although it's not look. Would you say Buddy Lazier is looking less and less likely, judging by the lack of chatter? Do you think Buddy Lazier can pull something out last minute here?
I'd rather he just take a year off and just get his ducks in a row. Maybe go out there and find a sponsor. And I don't know. I'm not attributing it to the driver. I think, you know, he's done somewhat okay with poor equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, just getting into the show with what he's got, I think, is impressive. But then without a full program, it's just not going to work. If you just wait till Thursday, Friday, it's just not going to work anymore. Especially now that there's going to be legitimate bumping. You can't go out there and put a 200-mile-an-hour lap in and expect to make it. Or we had 2 years of guys making it on 0-mile-per-hour qualifying.
Yep.
Davison and Tagliani both did that separate years. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be hesitant to say that he'd get bumped, but he's going to get bumped, and I don't know if he should even bother showing up. We'll see. Yeah. If he gets the money for full program, maybe, but I don't know. We'll see.
I'm with you. I would love to see him show up and, you know, pull something off on a Thursday, Friday type setup. But, you know, I think the odds this year are really not in his favor to do something like that. You know, with no practice on Monday, it's going to put a premium on every day available this year, which means there are going to be more cars, you know, running that Tuesday and Wednesday, which means teams are going to be that much further ahead. Versus spreading out their practice like it's kind of been the last couple of years, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there over the first few days. So I think it's important for Buddy if he can pull something off to get out there at the latest Wednesday. I don't know what if he can pull it off by Wednesday, he's got a chance, maybe. But even then, if he takes a year off and, you know, does some research and gets all his equipment and gets everything in order and gets ready for the 2019 Indy 500. I would put his chances of making the field of 33 much better in 2019 than 2018.
Yeah, or even just doing like a, I mean, we might be getting a little ambitious here, but just for him to maybe just get a full program together and him have, you know, because Buddy's not the greatest road course driver, so to have him do ovals only like a Ned Carpenter would, and then maybe put a guy like Santi Arrutia maybe in the road course only car next year. Your boy, Santi. Yeah, just doing something like that would, I think, just for them to get familiar with the car on a weekly basis and find its little quirks and find the ins and outs of a, especially now it's a new car, so they just probably just get used to the aero kit car, even though he totaled the last one, to now where he's got a new car to deal with again. I don't know what his chances would be if he had the chance to go, but I'd like to see them move up to multiple race schedule at least.
You mean my boy Santi with the invisible 70% budget?
Yeah. How is he still driving, by the way? Not to go on a tangent, but I thought he was done, but he keeps showing up.
Me too. You know, I think he's with Bilardi in Indy Lights.
Yeah, now Bilardi's got the Aaron Tielitz crash damage to deal with.
Yeah.
I know it's has like a crowdfunding campaign going, but yeah, I mean, Bilardi gets his money from.
I would like to know because I could use some myself. You know, I guess I will see if Stanti is racing next week in Barber. I'll be down there Friday, so I'll be I will report if the man who probably doesn't like me too much already, just because I keep teasing about his strange budget announcements in on Colombian TV or Venezuelan TV or let's call it South American TV because I don't remember exactly where it was
He's
announced.
Uruguay.
Yep, that one too. See, it was the one I didn't pick. Going back to J.R. Hildebrand, I think being in Dryden Riedbold's second car, I think Sage Karam stands to learn just as much from Hildebrand as Hildebrand does from Sage Karam, who's been with Dryden Riedbold the last couple years. Hildebrand, obviously, as we know, came oh so close to winning and is pretty much competitive at every oval he participates in. So, I hope Karam is, has open ears and open eyes during their couple weeks together in May, because I think a teammate like Hildebrand could help Karam kind of, get it moving in the right direction, at least in the direction that Sage wants to be in and getting back into a seat full time, or at least more than just one race a year. What do you think?
Yeah, the Dryden Riedbold situation has got me pretty hopeful for their future. I mean, they have two cars, which is why they fielded Hildebrand, but the notion behind them having two cars is leading people to speculate that they're looking for ambitions to grow their schedule. And I don't want to read too much into it, but I believe it was Bourdais. I can't remember. There was another. I don't know if there was another driver there. There might have been a fourth driver, but it was Bourdais. Hildebrand and Karam were all promoting the Texas race, and I don't know if you want to read into that too much, that potentially they're expanding their schedule, because why would Hildebrand and Karam be there if they're not going to be in the
Sure.
race per se? So I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, but yeah, I think they both stand to try to learn from each other so they can build the best possible team, because I think Hildebrand's half engineer, half driver. And I
Yep.
think Karam brings a lot of raw talent that just needs to
Refinement.
realize going into a turn side by side with Townsend Bell is never going to work. So, and then last year he just had a mechanical gremlin that's no fault of his own. So I think Karam, gosh, I don't want to say he's going to perform well because it just seems like there's always that what if with Karam, but I do think he's going to perform well this year at Indy. And then Hildebrand is a pretty solid choice. I can't remember what happened to him last year. He was running in the top 10 for pretty much the entire race. Like he was right there with Alonso, and all of a sudden he finished like 16th or something. I can't remember if he had a penalty or something, but he did not finish near the top 10. I think it was like 17th or something. So,
I feel like there was like a pit lane speeding penalty type of
yeah,
thing that
something
took him out of commission.
like that. And especially with, 10 or 11 cars that crashed out, you would have thought he would have been really close to the top 10 if
Yeah.
not in it. So, yeah, he's running out of chances. He didn't win my affection with his article that came out
Yeah,
after Harper. I think I've already ranted about that at some point here on Pit Lane Parlay, but just his idea that he was in practice, he wasn't always going for the best setup. He was just learning, trying new things, and learning about the car. And to me, it's like, okay, well, at the end of the day, your paycheck and your future derives from posting
winning.
results, not getting a good setup, so, or trying new things. So, yeah, he's running out of chances, but I think as long as he keeps performing well at Indy, he'll at least be a May program. I don't know about his full-time future.
Yeah, I think touching on Hildebrand's article from the end of the year last year, I get trying different things completely. I totally understand his point of view, but like you said, at the end of the day, Indy isn't like it was 15 or 20 years ago. Not to go all Rob Miller here, but it's a results business now. If you aren't producing, you're on to the next one. Obviously, as we see, Piggott got bumped up into the full-time position there, and deservedly so. But we shall see. I think they'll be a strong team, one of the stronger non-full-time teams this year for sure. Going back to an earlier topic, as we were talking about Phoenix before, and I wanted to touch on, and we'll make this our poll of the week. Speaking of Robin Miller and ovals, As everybody, I'm sure, read on Monday, Robin Miller lamented that oval races outside of Indianapolis are a dying breed. Many people agreed online, many people disagreed online. Matt, I'll get your thoughts first before I rant on this one.
Yeah, I did post some thoughts about it. What I like to call Twitter blog now, because the website that I used to run is no longer active. So I just, you know, take my iPhone out, go to my notes section, and then just screenshot my thoughts and put them on Twitter. And yeah, I felt the need to respond just because I didn't like the way. I didn't agree with Robin Miller's thoughts. I think Phoenix, while it was not a Fontana 2015 type of race, was still a very intriguing race, and it kept me captivated. It was a little slow there in the middle, but overall, I really liked the race. And so, you know, to Robin Miller, if it's not a front-engine car being innovated by AJ Foyt or Dan Gurney with sellout crowds at Milwaukee when it was still a dirt track, it's not a good race. And he's always going to have that nostalgia in him where, you know, I wish it was the good old days. Well, I think we just have to come to grips that it's not the good old days. But I think many people agree that IndyCar is as good as it's ever been, at least in the modern era. So I disagreed with him. I think that ovals as a whole, while attendance might be down, I think the racing isn't exactly poor quality. Go ahead.
I think... Yes, I'm going to expand on your thought there, your end thought there. Yeah, oval racing might not draw the crowds. I've seen some interesting points on how road and street court races are kind of like an all-weekend event. You know, there's things going on. I think if you could bring that, you similar to, obviously, the Indy 500, and there's concerts and parties and all sorts of stuff. If you can do that on a smaller scale, you know, Pocono does a little bit, I believe. There's like a concert the night before the race or two nights before the race, and you know, there's plenty of stuff to do at Pocono in the middle of the track now, which I think they're getting the right idea. If you can get some things like that, you'll draw more people in there. Obviously, part of this also means you need to promote better, for sure. But I don't think oval racing is dying. You can look at Pocono last year. Pocono 2017 was a fantastic race, by far the best race at Pocono since Pocono came back in 2014. And I have watched every lap of every single one of those in person, from the same seat and just outside of turn four, and watching Newgarden and Power battle at the end of the race, and Ray Hall go back and forth for the lead for a while. Was fascinating racing, and there was no major incidents. It was a great race. The crowd was, you know, not outstanding, but had improved on a year-by-year basis. And there is plenty of you know, chatter about Pocono. Even already, the Pocono Raceway team was doing a college tour this week. They were at my alma mater, University of Scranton. What day is it? Thursday? On Tuesday, and they were in Central Pennsylvania today. So, you know, tracks doing things like that are huge. Even if they give out some free tickets to get some younger college kids there and drive in some new fans, is, to me, seems like a good strategy.
Yeah, and I mean, just to kind of go through the list here, I mean, Phoenix put on a much better show in the last 2 years, but the attendance-wise wasn't that great. Indy is an outlier, obviously. It sells out. It's historic. It's great. Texas... while the stands look empty, you know, that front stretch, the grandstand, the front stretch is huge. So you're not going to fill that. And I think, I can't remember, I think I saw somewhere where they got 69,000 people to come a couple years ago. And then they put on an excellent show last year. So, I think Eddie Gossage will continue to promote that race really well. And I don't think that race is going to go anywhere per se, as long as Gossage is happy. Iowa is not an IndyCar issue. Iowa is strictly a whoever is deciding on, well, maybe it is IndyCar, because whoever is deciding to put it at 4 p.m. on a Sunday needs to get taken to the woodshed, because it should be back to Saturday night for like it was for a couple of years. That really seemed to get good crowds. The first couple of years just got great crowds, but ever since they moved it to that Sunday at 4 o'clock, which was 2016, I believe, it's just, yeah. I mean, even for our family, we've been down there every year, and for us to travel down there from Minnesota I told my parents this year if it was at 4 o'clock again, I'm like, no way. But they did move it to 1 o'clock on a Sunday, which is something, I guess.
Step in the right direction.
Yeah, right. Because we were getting home at like midnight, and you know, going to work Monday, it just sucked. So, and that's, you know, Iowa's not exactly a home for IndyCar fans. You know, usually you're relying on people from Indiana, Illinois, and other parts of the Midwest to travel to a race, and so that's what you saw with Gateway. You used to see that with tracks like Kansas, Chicago, Milwaukee. Iowa's a little bit out of the way, but people still tend to make the trip until they moved it to 4 o'clock, which just made absolutely no sense to me. But so I attribute a little bit of the attendance decline to that. And then last 2 years, the product hasn't been that great. So hopefully the new car helps. Your thoughts on Pocono were, you know, spot on. And I'll just trust your judgment since you're kind of the on the ground guy there. And then obviously Gateway was excellent. So hopefully we'll see what year two is like. I know year one of Iowa was excellent, and it's kind of just been slowly going downhill from there. So hopefully they can keep it up at Gateway. It sounds like fans voiced some concerns they may have had with parking, concessions, things like that. And it sounds like they're doing a really good job of listening to the fans. So hopefully that's a fixture on the schedule for a long time, and hopefully it's the season finale next year that the rumors that are going around, hopefully they're true.
Yes, that would be awesome. You know, I don't think oval racing is dying, and not to say that Indianapolis is any example of why, because, you know, naturally it's going to, you know, draw great attendance every year. Just the fact that attendance this year is up to the point where they are building temporary, you know, luxury suites in turn three or turn four, wherever that is, to accommodate a larger number of people who are looking for that fancy type experience. You know, you're not going to do that at a race like last year, which I think drew, you know, close to 300,000, but it wasn't quite a sellout like 2016. So things are definitely headed in the right direction. I know in just in the Pennsylvania area, there's been a little bit more talk about IndyCar than I can remember in quite some time. And so I don't think oval racing is dying. Is there are there things that need to improve? Sure, of course. I think we just talked about all of them, but to get as sad and depressing as Robin Miller got in that article didn't make my Monday any easier than a Monday already, or made it more difficult than a Monday already is.
So that's the whole question, right? Our oval's dying.
Yeah, there's our answer. Chime in on Twitter and let us know what you think. I'm sure we'll get some differing answers on this one. At least I hope we do. You know, again, on Twitter at @PitLaneParlay, join in the discussion, and we'll join in the discussion as well. Before we get to the pitfalls here, I did want to discuss F1 just for a minute, or really just the F1, two things about F1, and then we'll go to the pitfalls, since we're coming up on 45 minutes here, which is pretty good considering there hasn't been a ton of news. But you know, when you get a race like Phoenix that has such differing opinions, makes for a good chat after the race. But F1, one thing I wanted to discuss was Max Verstappen's pass on Lewis Hamilton. If you didn't watch it, Lewis Hamilton had some unfriendly words that I can't repeat on this show in the tent after the race. I thought it was a little ambitious of Verstappen, but then again, with the fact that it's so tough to pass in F1, I feel like I kind of attribute it to how, you know, Rossi tried for Wickens. You got to go for it, because how many chances are you going to get, especially in F1 where passing right now is next to impossible. And point two, after I ranted and raved about how terrible the coverage was much better. You know, ESPN ran it in a non-commercial environment the entire race, so you got the entire Sky Sports feed, which, is it going to make me watch every single F1 race the entire time? No, probably not. But it'll get me to tune in a little bit more, I'm sure, and I think is definitely a step in the right direction by announcing afterwards that they are going to continue that for the rest of the season, which is pretty easy to do when I think they're paying next to nothing for, you know, the broadcast rights of F1. So hats off to them. I don't know if you have any thoughts about F1, if you were able to tune in or not, but I'll turn it over to you on that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they're there's children listening on, I'll probably just save my thoughts. I just too many colorful words to be used to describe F1 at the moment. But yeah, I didn't. I watched, like I said on Twitter, I watched the first couple laps and then just turned it off because, you know. And to be fair, I did see on Twitter that it actually, to many people's opinions, it actually did turn out to be a good race. So, but it wasn't for me. I don't think at the moment I don't really have any interest in Formula One, especially if it's just going to be Vettel versus Hamilton every race again. I just have no interest in seeing those two pad their stats because they're already two of the greatest of all time. I don't think there's any debate about that. They're already two of the greatest of all time. They're just going to keep racking up wins, podiums, fastest laps, championships until someone else can breach the Ferrari and Mercedes bubble. The only thought I really do have that, as much as a fan I'm not, or as much as I don't like Sebastian Vettel, to hear his answer when a reporter asked,
awesome,
Lewis Hamilton, you know, what gave him the, I can't remember the phrasing of the question, but something about, you know, why were you swearing, you know, isn't that a bad example or whatever? And Sebastian Vettel just, like, chimed in for Lewis and said, you know, hey, we have a microphone in our mouth, and when we get the adrenaline going, we're going to swear, especially if we feel like, you know, we get hit by someone. You know, if you look at, you know, football players, he's referring to soccer for us lowly Americans. For football players, they don't have a mic in their face, so when they get tackled and they start dropping F-bombs and all sorts of bombs, no one criticizes them for doing it. It's just that they don't have a microphone in their face. And I did appreciate Vettel stepping in and saying that because he's 100% right, so...
Yeah, that was probably, you know, major respect to Vettel for that one. And, you know, it's always funny when you see, you know, for example, I know, Matt, you and I both watch a lot of hockey, when you hear a guy skate by the ref dropping some F-bombs, and you know it's, you know, in the heat of the moment, and obviously they're not even mic'd up, they just happen to skate by where a microphone happens to be, and you pick it up on TV.
Excellent TV. Excellent work.
It's kind of funny to listen to the announcers on whatever, I mean, I don't know about in Minnesota, but the Philadelphia announcers kind of stumble over their words trying to, you know, quick say something so people stop listening to, you know, the player cursing out the ref or the other team or what have you. So I thought it was a great move by Vettel to kind of stick up for Lewis Hamilton, even though they're not teammates. You know, definitely the right move there. Appreciated everything he had to say, and... I always enjoy, you know, watching somebody else feel awkward and silly after they ask a question and get completely shut down like that.
Feel bad.
Yes. Trying to think if there's anything else F1.
What is it, the Game of Thrones shame bell? Is that what you said a couple episodes?
I said that a couple episodes, but I don't think Jess has watched Game of Thrones, so she probably didn't follow.
I'll get all of your Game of Thrones references, don't worry.
I hope more people got it than just you, but... Either way,
I do have one piece of news I think we didn't miss on the IndyCar side. It was about Michael Shank Racing.
Yes, go ahead.
With Jack Harvey as their driver, they've had Sirius on the side of Jack Harvey's had Sirius on the side, Sirius XM Radio on the side of his car since last year, I believe, when he joined Andretti Autosport. And so it was announced this week that actually the Sirius XM CEO Jim Meyer is actually joining Michael Shank Racing as the co-owner, so now it's actually called Meyer Shank Racing, and to me that spells good news for the future of that team and for Jack Harvey if he continues to be an asset to them and continues to impress them with his work ethic and his on the track ability. So I think possibly, again, potentially, maybe, don't want to get ahead of myself, but potentially looking maybe at another full-time team here starting in next year. Do you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, great news story that kind of slipped through the cracks. I think it came out during the race on Sunday or, you know, race day at some point. Obviously, if you get a company like SiriusXM to, you know, own a team or co-own a team, never a bad thing, especially when your MSR logoing doesn't need to change. Minor point there, but I had to make that joke. Listen, I need my quota of one poor joke per episode. But, you know, great news, especially for, you know, Michael Shank and the team as a whole. SiriusXM is going to have plenty of money for plenty of years. I know my entire family has subscriptions, so I don't think they'll be cash strapped anytime soon, especially with the AutoNation sponsorship as well on the side of the car. you know, obviously Jack Harvey is contingent on continuing, you know, being successful to some degree, but either way, you know, looking like we'll get at least one more car, maybe not full-time next year, maybe they do 10 races and then full-time in 2020 or something along those lines. Who knows? I'm just guessing at this point, but definitely, you know, a step in the right direction for IndyCar, and another reason why I think, you know, IndyCar is on the up and up. You're getting a big company like SiriusXM to, you know, not just invest in sponsorship, but invest in the overall team as a co-owner is huge news. And with that, do you want to start the pitfall? You want me to start it?
I'll go ahead.
Go ahead.
Thanks again for you for having me on. Hopefully we get to hear Jess here soon. Hopefully, I don't know. I'm still bitter that she's in Florida, so I hope it's raining or something. hopefully it's like cold there, which is probably 60 degrees for them. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on again. I really appreciate it. My pitfall is related to Will Power's comments following his incident at Phoenix. He ran high into the marbles after being passed by Alexander Rossi, and he took exception to that. He said, or I can't even remember what he said, to be honest. Sometimes Will Power just says something and it goes in one ear, out the other. Which is weird, because I've actually, you know, there was a time, 2010, 2011, 2012, I just couldn't stand Will Power. And a lot of it had to do with the years he was with Tim Cindric. I can't
double
stand birds. Either. Yeah, the double bird. Well, that was just good TV. But there's a couple things. You know, he called Tags a wanker. I guess I see his point on that one a little bit. He pushed an official in Fontana in 2015 after he crashed with Sato. He wrecked Sato at Barber coming out of the pits. Like, he came down into Sato on that turn two, turn three area. And when he got penalized, he was overheard on the radio coming down the pits. He said, "Typical." It's like, dude, you just wrecked a guy. So yeah, when he said that, he took exception to the fact that Rossi passed him. And from, I think from his point of view, he was arguing the fact that Rossi's a lap down, shouldn't be racing me. I mean, looking back at it now, I mean, Rossi was the best car in that race, so he has every right to pass him, especially if he's faster than you. I don't understand why he – it's not like he's Milka Duno five laps down doing something for giggles. I think Rossi had intent. Rossi had the pace. Rossi had every right to make the move, and then he ended up, you know, pulling away from everybody he passed. So for him to take exception to that, I think deserves a massive pitfall for the week.
Yeah, I was disappointed to hear that comment. I watched the replay probably a half a dozen times before we came on air tonight, again after watching it, you know, a dozen times Sunday after the race. You can see as Rossi goes into the corner, Power is not super down low. He's holding that middle line and drifting up just ever so slightly. And, you know, Rossi's car was so dialed in, he could hold that low line. I think Power just got spooked and you know, lost it a little bit, and, you know, he doesn't...
Maybe caught him off guard,
Yeah, maybe he got caught off guard and you know, couldn't recover from that. That I would understand it, and I can't fault him for that. Rossi was a beast. And also, I don't care if Rossi is a lap down or not, the dude was flying, and he has every right to, you know, fight to get back in the race, because he didn't do anything. He didn't bump Power out of the way in any aspect. He didn't get up from behind him and, you know, touch the back.
Yeah, if he had taken him out, absolutely. Sure. I mean, sure. I wouldn't be surprised if Power went and decked him. I mean, I'm not condoning violence, but I wouldn't be surprised for Will Power if he did that. So, yeah, it's not like he decked him or took him out or anything.
Yeah, I think the word of the day for Power's comments there is disappointing. Speaking of disappointing, I'm going to switch racing topics here for my pitfall and go with Regan Smith, NASCAR commentator. Maybe he does a race here and there. I don't really know, to be completely honest with you. Tweeted out on Monday, I believe it was, and now I'm paraphrasing here and taking out some of it for the sake of time. Let's be real, folks. F1 is garbage racing. They get a free pass while NASCAR, which is the purest racing out there, gets hammered. Sometimes the truth hurts. There's a lot wrong with this. First off, I don't know if anybody pays attention, but nobody in IndyCar has ever said anything that inflammatory about other racing. Whether they like other racing or not, you know, Ray Hull has said some things, and you know, a couple other drivers said some things after St. Pete about the first F1 race of the year. But you know, they do it in a way that I don't think is crossing the line.
They don't say it's garbage,
right? They're not trashing the racing, because in the end of the day, racing is racing, and you know, we're all in this together to some degree. But you know, garbage racing, I think, is really just a degrading comment. Whether you like F1 or racing or not, just, you know, not. I don't appreciate that. I don't think it's the right thing to say, especially for somebody who is speaking for NASCAR as a, you know, part-time or full-time commentator. I think, you know, that alone would deserve a pitfall. And then by calling NASCAR the purest form of racing out there, sometimes the truth hurts. My words that I really would like to say about this probably aren't allowed to be said on air, but
there's kids.
Yeah, there's kids, and iTunes has very specific rules. So does Spotify. So, you know, what to say? NASCAR, the purest form of racing out there, that has staged racing and restrictor plates for all-star races. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. You be the judge if it's the purest form of racing. I don't think it is in any degree, especially just on the fact that there's staged racing and all sorts of manufactured things to try to get people more interested, which obviously is definitely not working this year. But yeah, I'll just leave it at that. I think it was in poor taste, and I think yesterday he came back and he gave a half-hearted, in the heat of the moment, apology. I was a little too strong, but I don't think he really backed down from what he said. He just said, I came on too aggressive, which is true, but we'll give him a pass for the first part about garbage racing, but I still don't see how NASCAR is the purest form of racing out there right now. I'll just leave it at that. You have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think he went to the Jenna Fryer School of Apologies when she wrote her thing about Alonso and then came out with a piece about mea culpa. And yeah, just about the purest form of racing. I mean, if we like run down the list, there's, and you know, some gimmicks are bigger than others, but there's Lucky Dog, there's the Chase, there's it's the playoff now. The green white checker, competition caution line, or competition cautions, the overtime line, which I think they got rid of now. Stage racing, phantom yellows for hot dog wrappers. Am I missing any?
I think you hit enough.
Yeah, well, they stopped it. They may know whatever happened to the competition clock or the caution clock or whatever. So that, because I knew they were going to do that with truck racing. I don't know if they ever decided to put that in the works for next year.
No idea.
I don't know. I just, there's so many kids. They just literally just need to go back to just
pure racing. Kind of,
what, do what the man says. Get them back to pure racing. So, because, and I'm not going to say IndyCar is not a gimmick here and there. You know, push to pass can be tricky. Sure. Reshuffling the order towards the end of the race, while I think it's an excellent rule, could be considered a gimmick. Double points at Indy and the finale can be considered a gimmick. But other than that, I don't know if there is any more gimmicks per se.
There's no huge gimmicks in IndyCar. Obviously, you know, I'm going to disagree on the push to pass, not so much as a gimmick as it is, you know, teams seem to use it strategically more and more, and not so much as a gimmick to improve racing. I think without it, road and street course racing would still be, you know, just as exciting. And if you guys remember, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, there was push to pass on ovals.
Yeah, I do remember
short ovals. So
we're watching the racing right now for the driver ratings when I'm going back to the years. Yes, there. I was like, Dixon's using push and pass on Kentucky. I'm like, hang on a second. Yeah, how does that work?
Ed Carpenter won his first race at Kentucky using his final push to pass.
So yeah, I mean, I think it was a necessity in the Arrow Kit era. Now yeah. I'm not as. I mean, Jay Fry said, you know, we might not even need push to pass here soon. So. I do see your point. I don't think it's the worst thing ever, but I do consider it, quote-unquote, to be a gimmick, per se.
I I definitely understand why people would say that, and I think, if you look at St. Pete, I don't remember exactly, but there were, a number of guys in the final laps of the race with a large amount of push to pass left still. I think Newgarden was the one who stuck out to me because I happened to be standing behind his pit box at the end there, and he had about 84 seconds left to go. Partially probably because he wasn't really in contention to win the race. But if he used some of that up, maybe he didn't need to, or even if he did, it wouldn't have mattered. So I think you're at a point now where we might see push to pass go away a little bit, especially as the racing improves with these new aero kits. I think even one of the guys at the front, I don't remember who it was for St. Pete, had a large amount of push to pass left at the end there. So we shall see this week at Long Beach. I'll make it a point to track that closely and talk about it next week. With that, we are at the 1 hour mark. Jess will be back next week, I believe so, in sunny Florida. Matt and I are jealous, although it's nice and warm here in Philly this week, so I can't be too jealous. But we hope to have Jess back so we can get her comical questions back in there if we have a guest on, and if not, so she can make fun of me. With that, Matt, do you have any? Let's end it with a prediction. Your winner for Long Beach.
Yeah, and again, thanks for having me on. And I think I can speak for you and for Jess to say thanks to everybody who took the time to listen to the episode and to follow Pit Lane Parlay on whichever streaming source you get it from, whether it's iTunes, Podbean, etc. We really appreciate the time you guys take into listening to us, and we love hearing you guys' feedback. My prediction for Long Beach, I'm going to go with the guy who kind of got robbed last year with a little mechanical failure. I'm going to go with Rossi. I think just looking at his momentum right now, I mean, he's on something fierce right now. So I think the safe and cautious bet would be Rossi. If you had to pick a dark horse, I would say Jordan King. I think Jordan King may raise some eyebrows this weekend again.
All right, I'm gonna go with Hunter Ray. I think he's been, top in fifth in the standings right now, and has had two strong races. I think he can really pull it off here with a win. If I'm gonna go a dark horse, I'm gonna go with Ed Jones. He was super strong last week at Phoenix. Finished eighth at St. Pete, and unfortunately had the crash at Phoenix. But overall, he still had a pretty good race there. Just a reminder again, guys, wildfireradiosports.com has the show live on Friday afternoons, 3:15 to 4:15 Eastern. The NJ Fry We Trust shirts are now available online. I tweeted out the link. I made a little online store to make it easy for everybody to purchase. And the contest for the leaving a review on iTunes, make sure to put your Twitter handle in the review so I can keep it tracked. And that now includes a free shirt and two free pit and garage passes to a race of your choosing in whatever race you're able to get to this year. I think, obviously listen on iTunes or Spotify or Podbean or whatever, podcast app you like to use. I think we're just about on everyone at this point. And if there's one you like that we're not on, please, let me know, and we'll be back next week with our thoughts on Long Beach before we get to Barber. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, keep your lug nuts tight.